Gabbert in the shotgun, four wide. There's the shotgun snap. With time, he'll turn and throw, and he's got a man. He's on the run. Look at him go. There goes Cecil Shorts. He's going. He's in the 20, the 15, 10, 5, and he's reaching. Touchdown. Touchdown, Jacksonville. 80 yards. 80 yards. Oh, my, 80 yards. No timeouts. Down five. Pressure coming. Gabbert plants, turns, and he's going for the whole ball of wax, and he's got Cecil Shorts. Shorts catches it. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Oh, my goodness. What a catch by Cecil Shorts.
You are amazing, Cecil Shorts. What a catch.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, Mike Dempsey out for today at least. I'm Tony Smith along with Ryan O'Halloran from the Times Union, Jacksonville.com, as we continue to react to the Jacksonville Jaguars 2016 NFL Draft. A lot of people love it, Ryan. And before we get into some of the details of it, just for you, your general reaction to what the Jags got done.
Well, a lot has happened since we sat here last Thursday at noon.
No doubt.
And thought, there's no way Jalen Ramsey is going to be there at 5. You got to think they're thinking Miles Jack at 5. And if anything, Joey Bosa will be there at 5, unless Dallas takes him at 4. But, you know, you felt this was going to be a good weekend for the Jaguars when San Diego turned their card in and it was Joey Bosa. I think he would have been a fit here. But you knew Dallas would go running back. Okay, Ramsey falls into their lap. So you fast forward 2 hours thereabouts. And now you're getting to 23, 24, 25. Jack is falling. Okay, are they trying to trade into the late first? They're not. So then that day ends. And when Thursday night ended, I was pretty convinced they were going to find a way to get him. And they did by trading up only two spots, sacrificing a fifth-round pick. So, you know, those are the two headliners. I think nationally people are giving these A-pluses and A's based on those two picks. Later in the draft, Ngakoue, you know, you see some reports. I mean, they won't say it, but from what I sort of got a feeling of, they went and worked him out on Monday because they just wanted to make sure they were on the same page. Maybe the workout, his pro day didn't go great. I mean, he's going to be a situational pass rusher.
Right.
Then you go Sheldon Day, who they list now as a three technique, which begs the question, what's Cinderic Marks' future right now and next year? And then while I just go through the whole class, Holmes they see as a defensive end outside linebacker, so that gives them some roster flexibility.
Sure.
And then, you know, Allen was a surprise, didn't expect to quarterback, and then Woodard from Central Arkansas. I think we'll have a tough time making the original 53, but should be some practice squad depth. But I mean, overall, they don't have any complaints, and they really shouldn't. My only nitpick would be in the fourth round, you had a couple good interior or offensive linemen sitting there, and you passed on them to take Day. Obviously, the opinion in-house of their lineman is higher than my opinion. So that's still, I think that's still a concern.
No doubt. And that leads us into our fan feedback question of the day today, which is who do you think the interior three starting offensive linemen are going to be for the Jags? The question is actually, who do you think is going to start at guard week one for the Jags against Green Bay? But that's really begging the question of who are the interior three starters for this offensive line, because it depends on where you want to put Brandon Linder. And if you think he is going to be the team's starting center, he's certainly going to be one of the three interior spots. Brandon Linder is going to be starting for this football team. A.J. Cann is going to be starting for this football team, and it's a question of whether or not they're going to put Linder at center or they're going to play him at one of those guard spots. And it's an interesting discussion for a team that, look, this is going to be part of the conversation throughout the offseason with this Jaguars team. The offense took a major step forward last year, but they lacked consistency within football games. And there is a big question about whether or not they can find that. I think some of it does come with just, you know, your guys mature a little bit. Blake Bortles gets a little bit better finding that check down, and they find a way to be in third and three a lot more than they were in that situation last year. But there is this level of consistency they need to reach that they didn't have in 2015, despite the massive step forward they took. And the offensive line is going to be the start of all that happening for this football team, and it's really not something that they addressed heavily, at least in this offseason.
They did not, and you know, let's say OTAs, they say, okay, Brandon Leonard's the center. Then the next question is, okay, do you play AJ at left guard or right guard? You know, the consideration for that is, okay, do you play him at left guard to sort of solidify the left side of that line, which hasn't been great in terms of run blocking, and then you open up right guard for competition. I think the interesting thing would be, is one of these three starters currently not with the team? And you see reports today that Slauson is visiting San Diego and Buffalo. Buffalo looking at him as a right tackle, which is bizarre since he's been a guard slash center his whole career. So I think the three interior guys obviously can I always get AJ and Linda can. AJ and Brandon, they're two of the guys. I think that third guy is in the house. What it's going to be is, okay, is it going to be a competition for guard or competition for center?
Yeah.
And they need better play from those three spots, because we talk about the pass protection a lot, but there wasn't a hell of a lot going in the run game, even when T.J. Yeldon was healthy.
No.
And not all of it was his fault.
No, and you feel like if they get what they expect, I think, to get potentially out of Beecham, if he can be healthy and really push for that left tackle spot, which is why he was brought here, it's why he's got a one-year deal with a four-year option, is clearly they want to see how far they can push Luke Jokel in that competition, and they decide to decline the fifth-year option on Luke Jokel yesterday as well, so they have Jokel in-house for one more year, basically to show them whether or not he's going to be the left tackle of this football team. And if you get that, it's Beatles is out at left guard, which the questions are legitimate about if Beatles really wasn't any good, then why did he play as long as he did for this football team? I think those questions are legitimate considering the replacements for that position are basically guys that we're talking about that were in-house outside of Bernadeau there at left guard. So I think those questions are legit. Whether it be Shatley or anybody else, if they thought he could just use another year to develop a little bit, I don't know. But it's clear that...
That's the problem, is right. That we don't know.
We don't know.
And it's mid-May.
And it's clear that the answer that the organization gave is that they feel better about the options they have inside this building than a lot of the people outside the building feel. And honestly, from the outside looking in, I don't know that you're supposed to feel very good about a team that on the offensive line has been a mess for 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have largely the same group of guys, at least, that are going to be answering the questions about what should the starting five be going into 2016.
Now, I think we can rule out one option. That would be moving Luke Jokel inside. One, he's too tall to play guard, I would think. And the other thing is they've said Kelvin Beecham isn't going to be ready till the first week of August. Well, if that means Jokel's going to take those first team reps through the entire OTA mini camp and first week and a half of training camp at left tackle, and then having to slide him inside. I mean, I don't think it's going to be. I mean, as long as Beecham can prove he's healthy, he's going to be the guy. You feel pretty good about Parnell, the way he played down the stretch at right tackle. This guy, get those guys firmed up, settled inside.
And at least the conversation coming in, it felt like Beecham isn't a guy that wanted to shift away from that tackle spot. It felt like he wants to play left tackle or not play.
Yeah, and like everybody says, we'll just move him inside the guard. Well, I always get, you know, he was the one who decided to sign here. There had to be some wink, wink, nod, nod. Okay, we're not going to move you inside. You're going to be a left tackle. That's what we signed you to play.
Sure.
And because he had other options on the table, and he decided to end the search and sign here. So I don't think moving him to guard is going to be on the table.
No, probably not. The fan feedback question of the day, dealing with that interior of the offensive line, it's a big question going forward. Who do you think those starting players are going to be? The two guards is what we're asking specifically, but that's basically like asking about all three positions. Where do you think it'll go for the Jaguars at the beginning of the 2016 season? Because it certainly feels like it's going to be the names that we've been talking about here for the last couple minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Bowenko at center is an option. I mean, he was
sure
good enough to play 14 games 2 years ago. He wasn't the worst lineman on the field. I mean, whoever, you know, had right tackle issues 2 years ago. But if they came, it's okay. What should be plan A if they're not going to sign anybody? I would open up center. I would say, okay, AJ and Linder, you're the guards. We'll figure out right and left here in a couple of weeks. But one of the reasons you can maybe put a guy like Boenko back at center is you feel so good about your guards that maybe they can overcome some of that, some of the deficiencies he might have.
Sure, sure. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey out. He's feeling a little bit under the weather today. Tyler's just taking a few days off, and he never takes days off. So good for you, Tyler. We'll see you back next Monday here on Jaguars today. That means Jordan DeArmond in the producer seat today. I'm Tony Smith. Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran alongside as we get things rolling here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. A lot more to dig into when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars 2016 NFL Draft and what it means for this team in 2016 and beyond as we get things rolling here on Jaguars today on 1010XL. All right, it's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey out, feeling a little bit under the weather. He was kind of sick when he came in yesterday, and I don't complain about guys that come in sick. I get it. You want to play hurt, whatever, doing this radio thing. And his voice was fine. But I don't want to get sick. And this small room, like every time I'm in a small room with one of these guys who do radio who decide they're going to come in and do the show despite the fact that they're sick, I can't help but go to, like, the movie Outbreak when that guy goes to the movie theater, you know, and then he's harmlessly spreading the disease around the theater, and 45 minutes later, the country has decided the only option they have is to nuke the town. Like, that's what I see in my head when people come into work sick, because I feel like there's no way I can avoid this. I can't see the germs that I'm getting from you. But a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars today for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, and much more. Same day service, Saturday and Sunday included. The right people, the right equipment, serving Jacksonville since 1978. Just visit MetroRooter.com on the web, or you can give them a call now, 904-695-1911. Fat Tony here alongside Ryan O'Halloran of the Times Union to talk about the Jags draft this weekend. We've been talking a lot about the offensive line, and I think it points to what the Jags really look coming into this offseason. When we were talking to Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell at the season wrap-up press conferences, the thing that especially Bradley was talking about was the struggles this team had defensively on third down. And it feels like we've been watching them try to fix third down for several months now in this offseason. Now, it was a major issue for them. It felt like they were pretty good against the run, even really good at times against the run last year defensively. But third down was such a mess for this football team. And it feels like we watched that for 3 days at the draft. We watched it for the couple weeks of free agency when it was really hot. This team has been focused almost exclusively on fixing defensive third down.
Yeah, and you combine free agency and the draft, and they feel they've taken care of all three layers of the defense. Specifically on third down, what's going to be interesting is what's the scheme going to look like. I think it's going to be a little bit more diverse, and there's going to be different guys lining up at multiple positions because they do have flexibility there. What's the first third down going to look like?
Right.
Jackson and Marks inside, Fowler and Yannick outside. Then you play Audric, maybe sees his playing time cut a little bit. Miller sees his cut. So are they fresher? Can they make another stride on first and second down? Linebacker, obviously Jack. And then basically in the last year and a half, they've just totally decimated the secondary. I mean, if Sample beats out Ciprian, they'll have four new starters in the secondary compared to last year. Ramsey and House, Mukamara is nickel. Tayshawn Gibson, who I think is the key to the secondary and bringing it all together.
Yeah, and look, with Ramsey, I think there are questions about exactly how he's going to be used. It feels like he could be kind of similar to what they did with Colvin last year, would be my guess, where he can play outside when you only have two corners on the field, and then he can play inside if you need him to. It becomes a question of what you want to do with Colvin. That's a guy that they've talked about loving inside, but it feels like Jalen Ramsey is a better athlete, mm-hmm. at least than Aaron Colvin is. So what exactly is it going to look like when they get all four of those guys back after the four-game suspension for Colvin? What's your best guess at how they want to use him?
Well, what I think they're going to do with Ramsey, and they've tended to do this with rookies no matter where they're drafted, is they don't give them a lot on their plate right away. they're going to give a lot to Jalen Ramsey because he's going to be a three in every down corner. What I think, though, is they're going to keep him outside. And remember, he hasn't played a ton of corner in college.
Right.
At least one full year. So, you know, I think they're going to leave him there and say, okay, learn this first. And then in nickel, because they felt Colvin struggled going inside outside, because as Aaron has said a couple of times, it's a totally different mentality. Things happen a lot quicker inside. You got to be more aggressive, more physical. He looked better playing inside than outside. He's a pretty good blitzer, as the sacks would show. So when they have all four out there, what it does, I think, is gives Todd Wash some flexibility. Okay, could you have a situation where you play maybe some dime on third down and use Miles Jack as your only linebacker and use Jalen Ramsey as sort of a hybrid, play Prince and House outside, Colvin inside, and have Ramsey be a little bit of a rover once he feels comfortable with his usual role. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. And it's going to be two layers to this is, okay, how much do they work on in the preseason games? How much are they saving up for Green Bay? And Greg Olsen last year in offense says they always say, you know, as a new coordinator, there's always the element of surprise, but you also have to rep your stuff enough in live action to feel comfortable with it. So back to the original thought with four corners.
Sure.
If you don't see last year in the last couple of years, you didn't see four corners on the field hardly at all. They usually would just play they played very little dime. So there's going to be an odd man out. I think right now it is Colvin, because when you have that four-game suspension, that means he's not going to get a lot of reps during the key parts of the preseason because they got to get these other guys ready. I mean, he'll be playing from behind. He'll have to catch up, so I think he would be the odd man out right now.
Yeah, and if you look at last year what they were doing, and I like to look at snap percentages for these guys and try to figure out exactly where they were last year and how different it may look. Paul Posluszny is a guy who played 84% of the defensive snaps for the Jags last year. The only guy who played more at linebacker, this is just at linebacker, the only guy who played more is Telvin Smith. And it sounds like there may be at least a chance that both of those guys see those numbers come down at least a little bit this year just because of the athletic ability of Miles Jack to cover, whether it be in the slot or against the opposing tight end. It certainly feels like he's the best answer they've had for that specifically since this regime got here.
Yeah, and I would assume that they're going to try and avoid him covering slot receivers because they have guys to do that. I mean, they don't draft Miles to bring him off the field, so you know they seem their confidence level in Paul Posluszny is undoubtedly higher than fans who think he's just a two down player. I think they're going to try and maybe squeeze another year out of him. But you know, as the season goes along, maybe you start adding more stuff to Miles Jack's plate in terms of, okay, if it's you and Telvin on the field on third down, you got to get guys lined up. Okay, how comfortable is it with the defense? So I think they're going to. I mean, there's ways you can wean these rookies in without taking them off the field, and I think that's what they're going to do.
Sure. And look, I think for everyone out there who's like me, it's kind of difficult to figure out exactly, all right, this is where Miles Jack will be. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is we just talked about how often Posluszny and Telvin Smith were on the field, and that's because they ran just two linebackers a lot last year. That was predominantly what they did. When you look at Dan Scoot, I think, played basically a third of the defensive snaps last year. You expect Miles Jackson number to be way, 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 way above that. And it's trying to figure out, with the style of defense they want to play, where's the balance and who's going to be coming off the field when? Because this is a football team that was really good on first and second down last year. And maybe that's in part because teams weren't scared of third down against the Jacksonville Jaguars, but it's also in large part, I think, because they were just really good against the run with the bodies they had on that field and with what Posluszny gives them as a middle linebacker in that kind of situation. And I'm curious to see where they feel like Miles Jack fits in best when they're in that first and second down situation on the field, because they were effective with Posluszny and Telvin on the field together.
Well, I think he's going to be your starting strong side linebacker. And I asked a scout about this the other day via email. I said, how do you think this kid's going to hold up against the run? You know, if he's on the ball, lined up over the tight end, can he set an edge? Can he get through blocks, and he said he will be able to. And he said that's not going to be an issue. So that erases that concern. What I think they're going to do on third down, whereas you said last year, third down nickel, no doubt, pause and tell, that's it. What I think they might do, and Gus sort of kind of alluded this to last week, is let's say you face a third and 13, mm-hmm. maybe that's Telvin and Miles. If you are a third and 3, third and 4, where there's still a little bit of the element of that they could run it, I think Paz stays on the field.
And you think Telvin's on the field with him there, or Miles?
I think Jack would be.
Okay.
I think that's going to be the – you have two starters competing there for who's going to play those third down snaps. So I'd be fascinated to see what Telvin thinks of this draft pick.
Sure. And, he obviously loved the Jalen Ramsey one.
He was in a good mood on Friday afternoon.
No, they love – all the Florida State guys love that one. And that – this is something I've been batting around with Mike the last couple of days. But I think there will be times when – we're going to talk a lot about the strong safety competition going throughout this thing. I think there are going to be times where you have third and long situations where it's in your best interest if you're the Jags that forget who's playing free and strong safety. That doesn't matter on some of these snaps, that the two safeties on the field should be Gibson and Ramsey. And those two guys should be allowed to kind of roam the middle of the field at times for this football team. Now, again, you want to make sure that Ramsey's comfortable with whatever role you're giving him, and that makes sense to say, you're going to be the nickel corner, and we want you to get comfortable doing that, and then we'll figure out some other ways to use you a little bit. But I think when he does get comfortable, I wouldn't be surprised at all if those two guys are playing safety some snaps.
And also, if your goal on third and long is to get your best athletes on the field, maybe they go with three defensive linemen. And maybe not so much defend the first down marker, but just flood the underneath stuff so you can really get off the field.
Yeah, we'll open up the phone lines here in just a moment. 641-1010 if you want to get in. Also on the Duval Ford text line, driven by Duval Ford at 641-1010. Same as the call-in number. If you want to get involved with the show, you can. Again, we'll open up the phones here in just a moment. There are some questions along that defensive front you mentioned at times. Maybe them only playing three defensive linemen. There are questions right now about who are the odd men out when it comes to that Jaguars front. And the defensive line specifically. And it
a couple
is,
of them.
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer, and again, could involve some tough cuts for this Jaguars team looking forward. We'll talk about that here in just a moment on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Rolling along here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran with you.
Talking about during the break.
Yeah.
We talked about it on the air going in the break. Okay, how does this defensive line line up? Well, I just punched out a defensive depth chart that had 20, and I came up with 22 names in 30 seconds, maybe a little bit longer. But let's say they keep 25 guys on defense. There are some names not on this list who are sort of household names.
Sure.
In terms of the Jaguars. So, but you wanted to start with defensive line.
Yeah.
So I think, let's say they, like you guys talked about yesterday, you keep 10. Strong side end, Audric Tyson. Three technique defensive tackle, Malik Jackson, Marks, Day. I put Bennett in there. Nose tackle, Miller and Jones. Weak side defensive end, Fowler and Ngakoue and Holmes.
Where's Davis?
That's where my question mark is. Here's where Ryan Davis makes the team, is I only have them keeping four linebackers, and Holmes would be a 4.5.
The lotto, whatever they want to call it.
So that would create a role for Ryan Davis. But problem Ryan's running into is the role he played the last 2 years, which was interior pass rusher on third down, also outside pass rusher. They've sort of got other guys there now. So he's back to having to win a job.
Sure. And he's cheap, at least for this year. He's cheap, and he's really good for them on special teams. Mm-hmm. So you wonder if those two factors, how much they play in when they're trying to play the numbers game a little bit with these guys, because he has been really effective on special teams. Heck, that's why they've been saying they haven't really expanded his role. on that line, because people have been calling for a year and a half that Ryan Davis should be getting more opportunities.
By the way, that's like one in the history of all-time excuses. That may be the worst one. He gets too tired playing special teams.
Well, they don't want to wear him.
Rush the quarterback instead. But
I'm with you, by the way.
Yeah, so the defensive line looks, you know, better depth, and you know what they said last year before Marks came back and got re-injured, is do guys on the defensive line benefit with less playing time? Generally, yes. So what's going to be interesting, okay, how much do they feel comfortable Dante playing?
Mm-hmm.
How much do they feel like Sendera can handle in his new role? So a lot of options, but also a lot of things that need to be worked out.
No doubt about it. And, again, we got months to discuss exactly what's going to go on with that defensive line. We talked about offensive line a little bit earlier. John dialed us up out of Tallahassee at 641-1010, says he has a question about what's going on with Luke Jokel. So, John, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I had a question for Ryan because I've heard this kicked around a few times when they talk about Jokel moving inside the guard. They talk about him being too tall, his height, but I'm kind of curious why that is. I personally don't think he can move inside because I don't think he can anchor well enough to be a guard. But you got to think the year before last, we had Jokel, Bowenko, Beatles. All these guys were 6'6", 6'5". Beatles was, what, 6'4". So we're talking about putting Linder at center or even guard. He's 6'6". So why is it always an issue? I see there are more problems besides the height, but I'm just curious why the height's the problem when the year before last, most of our offensive line was 6'6 plus.
Appreciate the call, John.
A look up the roster. Jokel is significantly taller than any of those other guys, but my issue with him is he plays tall, and that's where he's going to get in trouble. And, John, you alluded to it. Is the anchoring part? Is I think guys would get into his pads inside and push him up and push him back. So I'm trying to look at the heights here, but the Jokel thing, I don't think that's an option because he hasn't ever played it, and you have a presumed starting left tackle coming off an ACL.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke's going to get a ton of reps at that position. Just have him as an insurance policy.
Sure. Look, I don't pretend to know offensive line or what I'm really looking for when I'm watching, you know, film or tape of a game, what I should be looking for with an offensive lineman. I can tell you know, based on conversations I've had with you and with guys like Jeff Lagerman and Tony Baselli talking specifically about Jokel, look, Jeff and Tony will both tell me that Luke Jokel is good in the run game and that he has these real problems with people who try to bring power on the outside, and it's an issue where he gets his head down, his technique gets really sloppy in those situations, and has since he got here to Jacksonville, and I'm a little bit surprised some of that hasn't been worked out more to this point, but they tell me he's good in the run game. Now, is he strong enough to play guard? I don't know. But that's the conversation that everyone has, and I think in part because, look, he's the number two overall draft pick. He was the first pick, obviously, made by the Caldwell regime, and he's supposed to be the franchise left tackle. That's what they drafted him to be. That looks like right now it's not working out that way. They don't pick up the fifth-year option. They bring in Beecham to push him a little bit. Well, if he can't play tackle for us, can he at least freaking play guard? I think is what a lot of people are thinking out there.
Can he do anything?
Right, and I'm not sure that that's reasonable.
It feels like
if Luke Jokel can't play tackle, that then this year he's just going to be a swing tackle for this football team. And unless they can figure out some way to trade him when they get into training camp, if they can get any kind of value out of it. Mm-hmm. But it feels like right now, look, Beecham and Jokel, one of those guys is going to be the starting left tackle, and the other guy is going to be a swing tackle or a backup tackle for this football team. I don't think either one of them are going to be moving inside the left guard.
I agree. I don't think so either. And I had Jokel last year on the book for 10 sacks. So I am 6 in the first 15 weeks, then 4 in the last game. I had him for 6.5 bad runs.
They only gave him 2, right?
Yeah, so the 2 days after the season when they said that, I thought they were trying to, like, massage it a little bit. So I went back and checked. But in the run game, I had him there for, like, 6.5 where he just was totally beaten, mm-hmm. which wasn't leading the team, so it there's not a ton of precedent for a left tackle moving inside. So I mean, people say I'm Mr. Negative about this. I think what the decision on Monday was, hey, you're not in our future at that money. Keep working hard. If you get a chance this year, prove that you're worth a contract. And it gives both sides flexibility. And after this year, if Luke says, hey, even though I played a little bit, it's time for me to move on, then that's his choice.
Sure, and it's a bit precarious for the Jags in that they really don't have a tackle under control that's healthy beyond the 2016 season. So it's a bit of a precarious situation, but they made a business-slash-football decision on Jokel yesterday where he's just not producing at the kind of level right now where you pick up that fifth-year option just so that you can be sure that you have him for a fifth year. If he's not playing well enough, he's not playing well enough. And hopefully Beecham comes in and pushes him, and that's at least the idea they have. Is they brought in a talented young left tackle that's coming off an ACL to push Jokel to his limit, to try to get something more out of that guy and find out once and for all if it's going to work with Luke Jokel in Jacksonville at that left tackle spot.
I was researching a story yesterday up here in Friday's paper. I looked at the 2011 and 2012 drafts. The first two drafts of the CBA where the fifth-year option was intact. And all the guys who got declined, there are a couple examples of guys re-signing with a team, but a lot of those guys just move on.
Sure.
And I think that's what's going to happen here.
In all likelihood. It certainly feels that way right now. We'll see what Jokel can get done once we get into the offseason, since he's going to be the tackle for the offseason. Until Beecham can get on the field, Luke Jokel's the left tackle. Don't forget that. So he certainly will have a leg up in the competition as far as the coaches being able to see him for the next several months. Let's get back out to the phone line, 641-1010. Gary has dialed us up. What's going on today, Gary?
Good morning, Tony, Ryan. How are you? You know,
good.
Ryan, considering that the Jags only won 12 games in the last 4 years, I didn't understand the Brandon Allen selection in the sixth round when they already had Chenny and sewed up and has been there and knows the when you could have had maybe Vidal Alexander was still sitting on the board, at the very least could add offensive line depth to the team, or somebody like a Thomas Duarte, a hybrid tight end type of individual who could be a great complement to Julius Adams. And I'll hang up and hear what you have to say. Thank you.
Yeah, I was sort of with you on that one. We had me and Hayes were watching it on Saturday in the team room, and we sort of had a working list of offensive linemen that were available at the start of the day Saturday. They passed on Westerman, who I thought would have been a good fit, but only a guard. He didn't play center at Arizona State. He hung out for a long time until Cincinnati took him. Alexander was our last guy on the list who didn't end up getting drafted. Did he get drafted late? I'm trying to remember. But
I do not know.
The Jaguars passed on him a couple times, and That's what we asked Dave Caldwell afterwards is, you know, give us some of the mechanics on not taking any offensive linemen. His theory was that if there wasn't anybody good enough to take that they felt would have been able to make the team. Interesting, because I mean, I would have drafted him and say, let's find out for sure. Because to me, Brandon Allen isn't a wasted pick, but also, could you have drafted, like you said, another tight end who could be physical or an offensive lineman that, you know, you found Luke Bianco in the sixth round 2 years ago. He ended up starting 14 games at center.
Right.
So there's always some
bit of a different team situation, though,
yeah,
coming into that season, which I think they are in a different spot than they were. And I understand, you know, look, they didn't address offensive line in the draft. They didn't do it, and they had opportunities where they could have, and they chose not to. Vidal Alexander, by the way, went in the seventh round, about midway through the round, to the Oakland Raiders. He wound up getting picked. Look, once you get in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, this is where there are names that I know. I said this Monday when we came in, there are names that I know. You know, when the fifth round started, you know, I didn't expect the name to be called to Jacksonville, but a guy like Keith Marshall, who at his combination of size and speed at the running back position is very interesting to me. I wanted to see where that guy wound up, but it's because I watched him play, and he's at a position where I'm really watching this guy play. I'm not a scout, and I think with NFL teams, you get into especially sixth, seventh round, that's when your scouts are in the room saying, this is the guy, right? And I think you have to have someone in the room that really believes that this is the guy, the athleticism, this is what we see happening in the future. And if you got a bunch of scouts in the room, and I'm not sure that's what Caldwell is saying, that there's a bunch of guys in the room saying, well, maybe this guy can make it on our roster. And they decided to go with maybe some athletic upside in other spots. They find a guy that maybe they had a better grade on than a six-round quarterback as a developmental guy. Look, there's always value in quarterbacks. And the idea of being a team that even if you have your depth chart 1-2 pretty settled in Jacksonville right now, that doesn't mean there's not value in having a guy that you can potentially develop and get something out of down the line, which is a lot more likely than drafting a guard and getting something out of him in the same type of value down the line. But you have to be committed to that, knowing that you're basically passing on drafting something that could be a need to go get something that's a bit more of a luxury, which is the first time they've done anything like that.
Yeah, and you sort of, okay, who's their third down running back right now? I mean, I think it's T.J. Yeldon because he's just going to have to play every downs on those series. And when Ivory starts a series, T.J. will come in on third down. So the fact that Keith Marshall, he didn't get drafted, right?
He did.
He did.
He went, I want to say, seventh round.
Yeah, I was like, I thought that 40 time would.
Yeah, Reds, Washington.
I thought that 40 time would get him a little bit higher. But I sort of agree with the caller, though.
Yeah, and look, I love Keith Marshall. And like I said, I started tweeting about that guy in the fifth round. I was like, when is this guy going to go? He's the fastest guy at the NFL Combine. He threw up, I think, 25 reps on the bench press, which is really strong for a running back, especially a guy that can run the way that Keith Marshall can. But the injury history obviously knocked him way down. And I was hoping that he would get out of the draft at that point. I was like, oh, man, bringing that guy in as an undrafted free agent, just some freaky, freaky speed, but winds up going to Washington. But those are the guys that I'm watching, you know, late in the draft. It's some guy that I watched play football, whether it be in the SEC or somewhere else, but guys that I'm aware of. I didn't watch Montana. You know, like I didn't watch any Montana football, so I was aware of who Tyrone Holmes was, but didn't necessarily watch a whole lot of his football. So they make that pick. And you have to kind of go look. It's like, all right, who exactly is this guy, and what exactly does he bring? Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is a lot of times with those late-round draft picks. We got this date in football history, the Honda Driver on the NFL coming up as we roll along on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, another rousing edition of this date in football history. Yes, right.
Real quick, Jordan, you get 2 points from me. Anytime you can mention gambling in an update, I stay interested.
I like it.
The Vegas odds for the Jacksonville Jaguars. The over-under has leaped to 7 from 5.5 on this date in football history. Also today, historically looking at it, James Harrison, linebacker of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He had the pick six for Pittsburgh against Arizona in the best Super Bowl of the last decade, if you ask me, one of the best of all time.
That's a handful of years ago.
Yeah. Is 38 years old today. Carlos Williams, the running back out of Florida State, turns 23 today. Had a really solid first year with the Buffalo Bills last year. And as I heard him mention earlier today during his interview with Pro Football Talk and Mike Florio, Dave Caldwell mentioned that it is his 14th wedding anniversary.
Hey!
So a happy anniversary to Mr. Caldwell. That is this date in football history.
The Honda Drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
All right. Well, we have Laramie Tunsil and his legal team. They could pursue criminal charges or a civil lawsuit against a former financial advisor of his that could have played a role in leaking Tunsil's now infamous gas mask video and revealing texts to his former Ole Miss coaches. And another big news story around the NFL is the Bills signing left tackle Cordy Glenn to a 5-year extension. The contract is worth up to $65 million with $36 million guaranteed. And another left tackle was paid yesterday. Teron Armstead signed a new 5-year deal with the Saints worth up to $64.5 million with $25 million guaranteed. And free agent guard Matt Slauson is visiting the Chargers and Bills. The Bills have discussed interest in moving Slauson to right tackle if they were able to sign him.
All right, thank you, Jordan. I know Cordy Glenn, a 2012 NFL draft pick. Teron Armstead, not so lucky, Jaguars fans. A 2013 NFL draft pick, actually in the third round. Obviously, that's the same draft where the Jaguars selected Luke Jokel with the number two overall pick. And it's a draft that everyone's been talking about now for a couple years as being a bad draft. Heck, going into that draft, everyone kind of talked about it as being a down year in the NFL draft. And I said at the time, before we were ready to make that pick here in Jacksonville, that Ziggy Ansah was my guy.
He was my guy, too.
Yeah, at least in that draft, and it would have been more correct, it appears, right now. Who knows what he would have done in Jacksonville compared to Detroit. But the general manager gets held accountable for the picks that they make and when they make them. And in New Orleans, the third-round left tackle is worthy of getting an extension. Mm-hmm. In Jacksonville, the number two overall pick at left tackle is deemed not worthy of getting the fifth-year option picked up here.
Yeah. Well, what you hope from Dave Caldwell's standpoint is there's more of those, you know, hits than misses. Like, you know, next year at this time, when Allen Robinson signs a new deal, they say, can you believe this guy lasted until near the end of the second round? So, you know, you look at this 2013 draft. Among the top 10 picks, Jokel not picked up, Jordan suspended, Mingo option not picked up, Cooper's already been traded, not picked up, Milner at 9, not, Warmack at 10, not. So that's just the top 10. It was regarded as a weak draft class at a lot of positions. It ended up being that. But also, you know, Fisher at 1 looks like he's coming around. Lane Johnson at 4 has already signed an extension. So there were, I was on the Ziggy train because they needed pass rush, and also they acknowledged that he was raw, but that would have been the perfect time to take him, because by now, when they feel they're ready to compete, he'd be hitting his stride.
Yeah, and look, if you haven't figured out the pattern with me when it comes to the NFL draft, there's going to be some kind of freaky athlete that's going to be talked about as a top 10 pick, and that's going to be the guy that I'm going to fall in love with, and it's regardless of position, that's going to be the guy I fall in love with. We all kind of knew they were going offensive tackle with that pick. It's not some big surprise that they went the direction they did. I really like Khalil Mack. In 2014, they wound up going, obviously, with Blake Bortles, which Mack is a fantastic player, and Bortles looks like he's becoming one in his own right here in Jacksonville. And it's not easy. I'm not saying that the job that Dave Caldwell has is easy and that it was easy for him that year going into that draft. I did hear the comment he made where he was talking about, you know, we feel like you get three really good drafts, and then that third or fourth year, you start spending some money in free agency. Well, I hope he's talking about this year's draft being really good, because 2013 is just not working out for the Jags between Jokel and Cyprian now is going to get pushed for that strong safety job. Dwayne Grotz, who knows what his future is here in Jacksonville, even for 2016. Ace Sanders isn't even on the team anymore. Denard Robinson looks like his role is going to be diminished this year compared to what it was the last couple years in that backfield. They really, in the end, haven't gotten much out of that first draft class.
I mean, it's entirely possible that entire class will be wiped out by the start of 2017, that none will get a second contract here. And that was supposed to be the foundation, the start of the foundation. But as it turns out, it's going to be the 2014 class, Bortles, Robinson, Linder, Telvin, that will be the foundation.
Yeah. And look, 14 looks like it was a really good draft for Jacksonville right now. And it's funny, you know, we always talk about that 14 draft, and we talk about Bortles, we talk about A-Rob, we talk about Brandon Linder. And obviously all those guys are solid. They got Allen Hurns and undrafted free agency. And the name that we never mention is the guy they took first in the second round, which would be Marquise Lee.
Yeah.
But it is funny being in this building and having the opportunity to talk to Gus and Dave and a bunch of these different guys. They kind of light up. You know, just the possibilities with Marquise Lee kind of lights everybody up. I think everybody's frustrated with the amount that he's been able to be on the field for this football team, but you can see how excited they are about the potential of the athlete that they got the top of the second round, if he can ever just get himself on the field for this team.
I think that's a long shot for him to be really productive. Not because I think he'll get hurt again, but because he finished the year healthy, but I just think he's been passed. There are other options on this team with Robinson, with Hurns, with Julius, with, you know, with the running game. So,
and they love Rashad Greene.
Yeah, and forgot Rashad. So from Marquise's standpoint, is how does he find a way to get involved? And first thing is, you got to stay on the field.
Sure.
But it's almost right now, it's a luxury if he produces.
Yeah, and that's kind of the sense you get, is they like him, right? Like, they like Marquise Lee, and they like what he could potentially bring to him, but it does feel like a luxury. I heard Brent Martineau the other day on the afternoon show describe it as kind of, the Jaguars haven't had a lot of these for a long time, but kind of that, the ace in the hole. You know, it's that card that they have in the back pocket that they haven't been able to play yet, but it's potentially there for this Jaguars team, is just the explosive athlete that they have and a guy like Marquise Lee. And I'm not saying that you can count on it. He obviously hasn't been a guy that's been dependable since he got here to Jacksonville, but there's the possibility with that type of guy and what he could add to an offense that already looks like it's building something. We got a text in on the 1010XL text line driven by Duval Ford from the 727 asking, any possibility of moving Neil Sterling to tight end, big body athlete who could play backup to Julius Thomas?
They floated that out as soon as they drafted him, that it could be in the future. I mean, he is definitely big enough to play tight end.
Let me just ask the guy, can Neil Sterling play tight end, Dave? He can play whatever he'd like to play, according to Dave Caldwell popping his head in the studio there.
I like three questions I would have asked him there. But one thing they said about Sterling when they drafted him is maybe in the future, he's definitely big enough. Depending on the roster math, you know, maybe a little bit, but I think only in emergency situations this year.
Yeah, and look, I think there are questions on the offensive side. We've talked a lot about the offensive line and the confidence that they seem to have in this building. And for me, the word when we talk about the offense throughout this offseason is going to be trying to find some kind of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were, especially first halves of football games last year, where you're like, where are they?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of headspace is this offense in? Because we've seen them be able to be dominant at times in football games, and they'd come in and, you know, they'd get in that 2-minute drill and the offense feels like it would take off there at the end of the first halves of a lot of games in the 2015 season and come back into the second half and have a pretty solid second half. But there were times when it just felt like it just didn't show up, and they have to be better than that.
Yeah, second fewest points in the league in the first quarter last year. And then the third quarter, they're one of the highest scoring teams. So you start in that first half with the sense of urgency that you did after the halftime. But one last thought on Lee is, if I'm them, I would make him the number one receiver in the preseason. Okay, have him run every kind of route, gain some confidence in him, see what he can do, get him and Blake on the same page. And if you do find, if he does produce going into the regular season, it's sort of like found gold. Something you hope for but didn't expect.
Sure.
So that's what I would challenge Marquise a lot in the preseason.
A bunch of new names, new faces here in Jacksonville after what they've done in free agency and the 2016 NFL draft. Ryan and I will talk a little bit about who we think will be the most impactful player for this Jaguars team in the 2016 season. Who are we most looking forward to that they have brought in here during this offseason in the 2016 season, as we continue along on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, in case you were wondering if they actually are doing construction in the rain, the answer is a pretty resounding yes. I know we asked earlier if you could hear that in the background. I have zero doubt that you can hear that. Holy cow.
That's like the loudest. I've never operated a jackhammer, but it feels like it's right next to us, and there's specks of concrete hitting the ceiling.
No, it's pretty unbelievable. As I said early on in the show, if the ceiling collapses on me, please, just throw it to the break, and then we'll continue on at a later time. Right now, let's try to fight through it. There's nothing else we can do.
So, Jordan, can you actually hear us?
Barely.
Okay, yeah. Well.
No, I'm just kidding. I can hear you. I just am worried about both of you.
No, we're okay. We're okay. We're not in any kind of danger. It is maddening. I will say that it is quite maddening to be in this room and trying to broadcast. I guess we'll try to talk some Jaguars football.
Do we have any sound left over from the weekend?
Right, in the middle of all this, but just a few more minutes left here on the program, so we'll suffer through.
Yeah, one thing that I wanted to touch on was the rest of the division and
sure,
how they did in the draft. And I thought we'll start with Houston. You know, they made their big splash with Osweiler. They signed Lamar Miller, who I think is a very good running back. And they obviously coveted Fuller from Notre Dame, so they swapped spots with Washington because they feel they needed a speed receiver to go with DeAndre Hopkins. And I'm staying focused, but I think the key in the second round was they got the center, Nick Martin from Notre Dame, replaces Ben Jones, who goes to Tennessee in free agency. So later in the draft...
Well, they get Braxton Miller in the third.
They got Braxton Miller, who I was like, to me, it's a wild card. He's either going to mean, maybe Jaguar fans can relate to this. When I saw the pick of Braxton Miller, first thing I thought of, okay, Denard Robinson.
Mm.
He's probably faster, most likely.
Definitely bigger.
But it's like, do you underestimate just the transition these guys are going to have to make? He's barely played receiver now to do it at an NFL level. Interesting to follow that. And then they got the running back.
Tyler Irvin.
He's a really good
player in college.
Yeah, very productive. So I think he'll be a nice little compliment to Miller. So I thought the Texans did okay.
I thought they did too. And we talked about the Jaguars draft and really – this offseason for Jacksonville, it feels like it's been about, you know, third down on defense. And for Houston, at least coming into the draft, it's pretty clear what they wanted was speed. And they were going to get speed above everything else when it came to their draft this year. Tyler Irvin's a fast guy. Will Fuller can fly, can flat out fly. Now, he's not much of a route runner. When it comes to that, at least wasn't in Notre Dame. But I can tell you, having watched some Notre Dame football this year, and I was riding some fantasy football, so Fuller was on my radar the entire season. Fuller was the type of guy that Notre Dame would be in late game situations where he's the only guy on offense that can beat you for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And somehow, some way, he'd be the guy open behind the entire defense. And you'd be watching the game going, how the heck does that happen? And in part, it's because of his speed. And in part, it's just because he's a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's got a natural instinct for the game of football. Now, I hope he never learns to run a route because he got drafted by Houston. And that it's a terrible pick for them, passing on all the other receivers that would have been available to him. But that's the direction they chose to go. A draft that was clearly all about speed. In Tennessee, Ryan, I thought that it's pretty clear to me, at least based on what they did, the trade down from 1 to 15, they come back up to go get Conklin, who feels more like a right tackle than he does a left tackle to me, that maybe the entire time Tennessee had decided these left tackles aren't worth it to us at number one. If we can move out of that spot and target a guy that can play right tackle for us, then we're going to do it. And that's what they were able to accomplish in the first round.
Yeah, I gave them a D in Monday's paper. You look at their draft, Conklin probably would have been there if they stayed put, or at the very least would have gotten Decker, and they traded a second next year to move up. Yeah, they have 2 ones, they have 2 threes, but I thought that was robbed them of some flexibility. Kevin Dodd in the second round, 1 year wonder, that's always a concern. Then Austin Johnson, decent player. I don't get the Derrick Henry pick.
Why not?
I feel like DeMarco Murray's got a lot of tread left, and I think Derrick is a running back who gets going when he gets a lot of carries. I didn't feel like he makes a lot of sense for the Titans.
Yeah, but that is a power running team. At least that's what they want it to be, and now they have probably the best power running back in the draft, maybe in the last couple of drafts, in Derrick Henry. Now, he's obviously a guy who's straight downhill. My question with Henry is, did he land in a spot that is good enough up front that is going to allow Derrick Henry to do what he does best, which is get downhill? I know that's what they want the offense to be in Tennessee from the running game perspective. I'm just not sure if the Tennessee offensive line is good enough to make that happen. Mm-hmm. Heck, I'm curious to see exactly how DeMarco Murray is going to work out in Tennessee, in all honesty, because he was dancing a lot last year in Philadelphia. Obviously a super talented guy with what he was able to do in Dallas a couple of years ago, but didn't look like the same guy in Philadelphia.
You know, Kevin Byard is a safety, some turnovers. He played in the Senior Bowl, wasn't invited to the Combine. Sharp, the UMass receiver, led the nation in catches. But and after that, just a couple guys. But picking first in each round, it's almost like you're at a premium there. Kevin Dodd over Noah Spence.
Yeah.
To me, that was a...
Their draft, if Tennessee felt like a safe draft, right, where they weren't going to take a whole lot of risk on a whole lot of guys at a whole lot of positions. They were going to take what they thought was the safer pick. They're trading up to go get the right tackle, right? They're taking the bigger-bodied defensive end. Like, they're doing a lot of these things that feel like the safe pick. It's almost like you felt watching the Jaguars draft since, say, 2013, when there's a new regime and everything's kind of new, and you don't feel the team swinging at all. You just kind of feel them trying to hit singles and hope that they can do that four or five times in that draft, which is why, look, if I'm Tennessee, I have no hesitation. Where they wind up taking Dodd, I wouldn't have even hesitated for a second taking Miles Jack in that spot. Mm-hmm. But it feels like with a new regime trying to get something done, the risk of missing the single to try to go for the home run felt like too much for that organization this year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Jags. They took Cyprian to lead off the second round of their first draft. Seemed at the time like a safe pick. He was highly regarded. He played at a smaller school. Hasn't really worked out. The Dodd thing is there are a lot of other pass rushers there who had more production, but they went with him. And maybe I think he's going to be like a feast or famine guy.
Who, Dodd?
Yeah.
Yeah, he feels like, I mean, it's a one-year wonder thing, and honestly, it's even more than that. It's more like a three-game wonder thing when it comes to Kevin Dodd. I know me personally, when I was watching the draft, when Ogba and Dodd went first and second in the second round, I was like, well, there's two of the guys I didn't really want.
Yeah, I mean, Ogba was also interesting because before the draft, Mel Kiper was asked about him. I said he's going to need a good D-line coach and he's going to need some time. But to me, I would like, especially that pass rusher, if they don't do it right away, do they really come along at all?
And finally, the Indianapolis Colts. And the Colts had it kind of like Tennessee. I don't feel like Indianapolis felt like they had to play it safe. I think Indianapolis knew what they needed to do, which was help their offensive line, which is something they haven't done in the draft the last couple of years, and finally made it a priority to help Andrew Luck up front so he stops getting hit around so much.
Yeah, I mean, they probably figured correctly that Kelly wouldn't be there when they pick in the second round, so they reached for him at 18. You know, like a couple weeks ago, the Jaguars brought Ryan Kelly in, probably, you know, maybe how about if he's there at 38? So, shows you how early he went. And then they just kept drafting. They drafted another center. They drafted LaRaven Clark. He could move inside to guard, 6'5". And then they didn't draft anything to address their pass rush, which I thought was interesting because their defense wasn't very good last year. They've had a coordinator change. So they're going to have some new pieces. But, I mean, it seemed like going into this draft, the Colts are saying, okay, we're going to draft a lot of offensive linemen. We don't care where they are on anybody else's board. This is who we're taking.
Yeah, obviously Antonio Morrison, the interior linebacker from Florida, they're taken as well. And, look, we've been saying that we're down here in the middle of construction, and, you know, it is what it is right now, at least for us, with just a few minutes left here in the program. And if it doesn't get stopped here in the next couple of minutes,
if you're still listening,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, I know we've had a lot of people on the text line driven by Duval Ford that are, you know, they're having a little bit of fun with it right now. The people responding to the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question. We've gotten a couple guys that are now saying that it's going to be Linder Can and the guy working the jackhammer.
He's got good upside. He's got good pad level.
Playing on the interior line. Hopefully this will stop in the next few minutes, but if it doesn't get stopped, we may just hand it back to the boys over there at the station. In case that is what we have to do, Ryan, what do you have coming up on Jacksonville.com?
Well, we got we had online right now. Phil Pyleman wrote a good story on Sheldon Day. He sort of got lost in the shuffle on Saturday with all the other stuff going on. Friday, I'll have something about the fifth-year option history. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we'll have coverage of the Jaguars rookie camp. No coverage from on the field, but we'll have two opportunities to talk to these guys. So, and then basically in the Times Union next week, I'll plug our section. We'll be all over the players every day, and So a lot of golf in next week's papers.
Yeah, we might be back for the fan feedback spotlight, get some of your answers. We may not. We'll find out here in the next couple minutes as we roll along. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition. Mike Dempsey out as he is feeling a little bit under the weather. He'll be
good decision, Mike.
Back with us tomorrow. We'll see if we'll be down here at Jackhammer Jacksonville or if we'll be back over at the studios. It was unpredictable that this would be the day that they decided to jackhammer right above our heads, but that is what has been going on at least for the last couple of minutes. So we'll see if we get to the fan feedback spotlight. If not, we'll hand it over to the chalk maybe a couple minutes early here on a Wednesday as we roll along on a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jack Force Today on 1010XL.
It's built.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today.